That was the right decision. I don't give a shit what any of y'all say. All right?
Welcome. Bienvenidos. Feliz Navidad. This is the only South Carolina Gamecocks sports podcast that exists on the internet. Don't even dare try to double check us on that, because it's fact. It's canon. I am DC3. Alongside us, as always, Sam and Alex. Guys, we have awoken from our long winter's nap. There's just been a lot of stuff that's been going on. You guys can probably tell from my voice that I am probably going to die at any day from a sinus infection that's now reaching its third week. We had a lot of stuff going on. It wasn't our intention to take this big of a break, but here we are coming back to you through the airwaves. Gentlemen, there's been a lot of stuff that's gone on since we last podcast.
You know, you say we didn't mean to take this long of a break, which is true, but Gamecock football didn't exactly incentivize us.
Yeah, nobody else came to work, so we decided just to take a little time off, too.
We're just working with what we've got.
It really wasn't. There really wasn't much to talk about.
Beyond it,
it stinks.
That's a great point. Why do a podcast week after week when we're just saying the same crap over and over and over again? So
that's interesting. Buzz off if you're angry. I think we're still doing the same crap over and over again.
What's that?
I said that's interesting, considering we're still doing the same crap over and over again. But
okay, well, you're not wrong.
I digress.
You're not wrong.
I'm skipping ahead. There were a lot of interesting things that have gone on in the last couple of weeks that are not necessarily Gamecock football related, but there are winners and there are losers. So, Sam, why don't you start us off here from our long hiatus with your winners and losers from the last time since we have podcasted?
Okay, so I'm going to start with my loser. In classic Sam McDowell fashion, I'm going to pick on Dabo. Here's a question for y'all. Have y'all seen a more insecure and immature two-time national championship winning coach?
Not quite as immature, no.
What about insecurity-wise?
Definitely not.
Yeah, Richard?
You know, Urban Meyer has gone on these little panty hissy fits before. But, I mean, in the same vein, you know, Urban Meyer had a heart attack and, like, came to work the next day. And, you know, Urban Meyer has done such things as, like, say, for example, the other day on the ACC Network, Urban Meyer taught everybody how to eat a sandwich. Right. So he's got he's just sort of he's also a shithead.
Yeah. So anyway.
And never mind. But yeah. I have never in my life seen someone so absolutely unrelentingly obsessed with what other people's opinions are of him than that man. And it's very interesting insofar as that the national media has now just started being like, What are you talking about? Why? None of us are saying any of this, you know.
Okay, hold on. Can I do my winners and losers, though?
Okay.
Yeah, I was just wondering.
It's been a while. I don't know what I'm doing.
I know. There's a kind of a yes or no question. Anyway.
No, I haven't.
So, two-time winning national championship coach, several ACC titles. He gets up in front of the media sometime this past week and cries about, actually, I feel like it's been multiple times. No, this week,
several,
crying about their ranking and how they don't get any respect and yada, yada, yada. And then he said something today, I think maybe it was yesterday. He said something in the last 48, 72 hours about how no team since 1966 And I think Alex, maybe you sent me this. You correct me if I'm wrong, if this is the wrong quote. Said, no team since 1966 has started the year number one, went undefeated, and then dropped in the rankings throughout the year.
To number three specifically.
Right.
Yeah.
And then me and Alex both figured out it actually happened in 2014 with Florida State.
Yeah. The very same thing happened
to
Florida State.
Exactly happened in 2014 right. with Florida State, which is funny because a lot of Clemson fans, like, as soon as I don't think that Bud Elliott was the one that made this comparison at the beginning of the season, just like metrics wise, comparing them to 2014 Florida State. But as soon as that happened, every single Clemson fan that was in the entire room was just like, and completely interjected, but it's getting kind of freaky about.
Well, and what's worse about the whole thing is, like, after he said this blatant lie, then all these, you know, people started calling him out on the Florida State thing, and like, no, Florida, this happened to Florida State 5 years ago when the first college football playoff, and then they proceeded to get trounced by Oregon. But then Clemson fans and their grand delusion started saying, well, Dabo was specifically talking about the AP. The AP hasn't mattered since 2013.
The AP hasn't mattered
since anybody ever liked anything that's come out of the AP poll.
The AP all that hasn't matters mattered is, since the BCS system.
Exactly. All that matters is the college football playoff, and what happened to Florida State in 2014 happened to Clemson this year because their strength of schedule is atrocious.
Yeah, and so I'm getting to that part too.
Yeah, sorry.
It's okay. I'm glad I'm stirring up vibrant conversation. Apparently. And I'm like, okay, Dabo, I'll tell you exactly why y'all dropped in the rankings. While teams like LSU, for example, were beating Auburn, Alabama, Florida, and Georgia, all currently top 10 teams in the college football playoff ranking, or the AP poll, even maybe, you were beating Wake Forest, Boston College, and Syracuse. Yes. Don't come and no, do not come at me with the whole, well, South Carolina hadn't beaten ACC school since yada, yada, yada. Yeah, I get that too. Okay, we've lost a bunch of games in a row to ACC schools. That doesn't mean your conference doesn't suck. And a four, and I'm not saying this for the more, hold on, please.
Okay.
Just, I'm getting there. I'm getting there. I'm trying to. That doesn't. And this is not a moral victory thing, but it's also a fact. A 4-8 South Carolina team gave you a better game than the ACC Coastal Division champ. A 4-8 South Carolina team was more competitive with you than a 9-3 Virginia team. That's how sorry your conference is. Your conference is terrible. That's why you dropped in the rankings. Winner of the week, Alex, because he doesn't have to make Baylor his winner of the week anymore because Baylor lost.
Yes.
And we were going to punish him and make him make Baylor his winner of the week if they won the Big 12.
Yes, yes, you were.
Although it would have been fitting because you think about it this way, Alex. None of the coaches that are there right now had anything to do with the whole rape thing.
Right.
And those players are all innocent. I mean, they weren't part of that. So
right. So if I jump into, you know, to my thing, I mean, like, I wouldn't say that I'm going to make Baylor. I can't make Baylor the winner of the week because obviously they lost and they had their chances, but they blew it. But what I will say is I got to give them a lot of credit because what they went through, which ultimately made them my perennial loser of, you know, the past 2 years, basically, you know, Matt Rhule has done a really impressive job in 2 years to bring Baylor back to where they are. I mean, they were, you know, some of the things that they were doing to allow me to make them my loser of the week every week on the football field were just embarrassing, very much like a 4-8 South Carolina team. And you know, he has done an incredible job of getting that school to believe in themselves and to fight back. And again, they had their chances to win it and to be in the playoff this year, and they didn't close it out. So I would definitely not make them my winner of the week, but I would like to give them a lot of credit for doing what they've done this season. I do want to make all of us winners of the week for the possible press conference and Twitter content that we're all going to get ready to get into with Lane Kiffin being named the new head coach at Ole Miss.
Oh, it's going to be amazing.
I don't know if that's necessarily like a great hire. I do think that he's kind of learned his lesson since he got left on the tarmac by Nick Saban. And he was humbled a little bit having to take that FAU job. But I'm just here for the Twitter content and the things he's going to have to say now that he's back in front of like big-time national media. It's going to be awesome.
So, have y'all seen the Peloton jokes going around on Twitter about Lane Kiffin?
No.
Y'all know what the Peloton thing is, right?
It's
a stationary bike where they gouge you for your money by making you pay for a subscription or whatever. The whole thing was like, it was like Lane Kiffin would sell your wife a Peloton to watch out.
Oh, wow.
Ole Miss.
Oh, wow.
I don't disagree with that.
That's rough.
So,
I'd like to, you know, and then I'm going to make my loser of the week Lee Corso. And not for the fact that like Lee Corso is like any kind of a bad dude or anything, but, you know, I've never been like the biggest fan of his, but here he had a pretty good season picking winners, but here right toward the end, I mean, he has just had a horrible little run at it. I mean, first it was, you know, we're going to see Utah in the playoff and they're going to turn some heads. Well, then they got blown out by Oregon, so that didn't happen. And then as Kirk Herbstreit gets done calling that game, he gets off the plane and he goes live with Lee Corso in the airport. And Lee Corso's like, it's going to be Baylor. They're going to finish strong and da-da-da. So, I mean, like, within the process of, you know, less than 12 hours, Lee Corso was just hammered on some of these losses. So, and it was just kind of funny because he was so sure of himself and, like, I don't know. Sometimes to me, the way he says those things on air, it's very condescending. Like, none of you know anything. And the Utes are here to stay. I'm just going to tell you. And so Lee Corso, loser of the week.
Yeah, to be fair, he did at least pick LSU, which was
I think anybody would have picked LSU.
Yeah, it's like the least ballsy pick of all time.
Yeah, I would have probably told you that if you didn't believe that LSU covering and the under was a good play last weekend, I would have said that you hadn't watched any football all year long.
This whole deal about, you know, because Corso has also said Ohio State is the best team. This year's Ohio State is the best team he's seen ever. I don't know if anyone out there on College Game Day has watched LSU multiple times, but that is probably one of the best SC teams ever.
What was that? I mean, I don't know, Sam. Like, I mean, this was maybe 30 seconds into us talking, and I just unprovoked just blurted out, like, man, LSU's just so much fun to watch.
Yeah. Well,
which is weird.
It's like watching them. I'm a little biased here because I'm a big Saints fan, but it's like watching the Saints play offense at the college level. I mean, they're running the Saints offense. That's all they're doing.
Yeah, they are.
I mean, Joe Brady, we talked about this too. Joe Brady worked with the New Orleans Saints under Sean Payton for 10 years, 11, 12 years before he came to LSU. I mean, he's running the Saints offense with a college twist to it. That's all he's doing. So, and he's got a quarterback that can throw it all over the field, and he's got receivers and running backs, and it's a lot of fun. You're right. It's a lot of fun to watch.
It's
like its own unique thing. I can't quite like put my finger on what kind of offense that is other than just the general spread. But it's
– We can't quite put our finger on it because it's something about moving the ball forward, and that to me is – a very foreign.
Yeah, I don't know. What does that mean? What's a forward pass?
Farther than 7 yards.
Wait, you mean you can throw it beyond the stick on 3rd and 8? You don't have to throw a 2-yard hitch route?
Joe Burrow did the shit that we did when we were like 9 or 10 and threw a pass to himself.
Yeah, except he wasn't like Holinsky and he didn't throw it again. He actually took off and ran with it.
Which actually kind of sent us down a rabbit hole of looking into Mike Canada's career scope, which, you know, gave me indigestion of a different variety.
Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Richard. My bad.
No, you're fine. I mean, it's just LSU's fun to watch. That's it. That's all.
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
One little note I was going to make. I found it interesting. They were showing the quarterbacks that Georgia has had to play against this year.
Oh, yeah.
And they were all like second, like in conference, it was mostly like second string quarterbacks or converted quarterbacks from different positions. Like legitimately, before they played Joe Burrow, you can make an argument the best quarterback that they had to play against, the best quarterbacks were probably Kyle Trask and Ryan Helinski.
Yeah.
And let's be honest, Helinski was dicing up their secondary before he got injured in that game. I think he was like 8 for 11 for 100-something yards. He was actually having a really nice game there. So it really shouldn't surprise, knowing if we knew that stat going in, if you knew that stat going in, it probably shouldn't surprise that person very much that Georgia got lit up like a Christmas tree yesterday. Because
no, not at all.
That's the first like legitimate starting quarterback they've played in a while. So, yeah. Anyway, Richard, what you got for us?
And, you know, if you want to talk about, interesting thing, out of the box here, right now around the holiday time, this is holiday bonus time. Everybody's getting ready for the Christmas season, and there's a lot of things that are attached to that. One of those is holiday bonuses, and college football's not immune to it because now is college coach buyout season. Obviously Jimbo Fisher and Will Muschamp's buyout and Dino Babers and all the other talk that has surfaced recently about how much money people get paid. It's actually kind of funny when you break down. I thought this was a funny rabbit hole to go down that I was privy to the discussion about. I guess it was 2 weeks ago, Texas A&M's offensive production, roughly sub 50 yards in the first half for them offensively. And so it basically rounded out to the way that Jimbo Fisher's contract goes. He was getting paid basically an F-150 for every single yard that Texas A&M gained on offense. So that's, for the people playing along at home, it's roughly $67,000 per yard of offense to coach that game.
Nice.
Then you talk about everybody else that's been bought out. We'll get into the people that have just been recently hired by certain institutions. And we're going to get into our own diatribe about assistant coaches here. But, I want to say the winner this right now is anybody. If you're a coach, good for you. Y'all getting paid. Y'all getting paid much.
Well, Power Five coaches.
Yeah. Or a lot of former Power Five coaches sitting on their couches, like Charlie Weiss.
For example, Matt Canada.
Willie Taggart.
Bobby Petrino.
Getting that paper just to watch TV.
Larry.
Please do not call plays for our football program. Here's $10 million.
I got a name for you, Larry Coker.
Oh wow.
I always like random. If you notice, I like randomly bring him up once every 2 years on the podcast. I think it's pretty funny.
What's his face from NC State that got slammed a couple years ago? I never liked him because he made the
guy before Doran.
Oh, no, I might actually be thinking of Dave Doran. No, I'm not thinking of Dave Doran. There's no way.
Tom O'Brien.
There you go. Tom O'Brien. That's the one. I always used to think it was really stupid because NC State has a an affiliation with Adidas, and you would cut to the coaching staff on the sidelines, and you know, to take this for what it's worth, but he and the rest of the coaching staff would wear golf shoes, Adidas golf shoes, on the sidelines. Just take that for what it's worth. The loser right now, speaking of this, that's an absolutely stupid fact that makes no sense, doesn't matter for anything. The loser this week is anything remotely relevant to common sense in football. Sam has already alluded to coaches throwing hissy fits over getting what I would say, arguably, the best draw in the NCAA playoff. Like, I mean, seriously, the number three seed is probably the best seed. It really is.
Wow. I think Ohio State beats Clemson.
Oh yeah, I think they run away with it.
I don't think Clemson can block their front four.
But even still, like, just theoretically and in years past, that number three seed, Clemson won the national title out of a number three seed.
Yeah. If you want to, yeah,
it is hypothetically the best way and your best alley to winning the national championship if you're the best team. But common sense does not matter right now. This is the silly season. Speaking of silly season, holiday parties. All right, I'm going to poll the room here. I already have my opinion, but what do you guys think about just this month having 25 different Christmas parties to go to?
25?
I've got 23 on the book between now and, well, between the 1st of December and the 25th of December.
You have to go to 23 Christmas or holiday parties?
I have been to 6 in the last 5 days.
So,
it sounds like a lot, but I mean, I guess I never think about it because December is basketball season, so I don't usually have the time to do any of that.
That sucks.
That's a lot.
Yeah, I have exactly...
I do love the holiday season, though.
I have exactly 0 holiday parties to go to, and I am perfectly fine with that.
See, I love Christmas.
Oh, I love Christmas too, but I don't like the parties.
I love everything from like November 1st. Okay. I'm not a Halloween guy. I'm just going to go out there and I'm not a Halloween guy. Not really big on Halloween. Although I am pretty damn good when it comes to costumes. I just am not a big Halloween guy, theoretically. Once Halloween is done, I'm in on holiday stuff and festive and decorations and this thing, that thing, getting in on it and the music and blah, 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 whatever. I would be totally fine if, other than the actual holiday and the people that I have to associate myself with during the holiday season, that I didn't see any of my friends for a period of 60 days. Christmas parties are exhausting. And, you know, I'm, like I already alluded to, I'm 6 into currently a stretch of 12 by Thursday of next week. So I will have had 12 in a span of 10 days. And I can't. Holiday parties are stupid. I'm just going to say that. Why don't we all just agree that let's just have fun on the holiday. Let's not drag this shit out for 3 months.
Oh, I could definitely drag it out for 3 months.
I mean, sure. I could drag it out, but I just can't go to your house and 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 then go over there and then do this at this place and this thing and then I don't like to be, I don't like, well, I guess the most particular portion of this is I don't like to be forced to eat and drink. I am really good at doing that on my own.
That's fair. So, Richard, slight correction on the 3-seed comment that you made.
The
3-seed has actually never won the college football playoff.
Clemson wasn't a 3-seed last year?
They were not. They were a 2. And the year, the other year they won it, they were a 2. So here's another fun factoid. Only a 4-seed and a 2-seed have ever won the college football playoff.
Interesting.
A 1 and a 3 have never won it. So Ohio State was a 4 in the inaugural college football playoff. Bama and Clemson, those 2 years after that, were 2s. Bama was a 4 when they beat Georgia. And then Clemson was a 2 last year when they beat Alabama. So,
yeah. Okay, fair enough. I don't know why I had that in my head that they were a 3 last year. Okay.
Yeah, I don't know.
Well, whatever. Just the world's just hating on Dabo.
That's it.
That's it.
So do we want to plug our Langston interview now?
Yeah, let's do that.
So we had we apologize to Langston and to our listeners here. We had a really good sit-down interview a couple weeks ago with Langston Moore. Y'all know who he is, and really great interview. So we're going to plug that in real quick, and y'all take a quick listen. All right, now joining us on the GabbaCast is Langston Moore. Langston is you should know who he is, but if you don't, he's a former South Carolina football player, and he is a known author for children and former sideline reporter for the hometown radio broadcast, and we thank Langston for being on the show. Langston, how have you been, man?
I'm doing great, man. Just been out here, you know, enjoying football season, and been chipping away at this podcast, always working on the books and all those different things, you know, always touring schools, Preston, and working on the kids' literacy, trying to get them to go pro in books, and using our stories to do all that. But the biggest thing we've been doing lately is finishing out this episodic podcast deal on the 2004 Clemson Carolina.
Yeah, and we're definitely going to, I'm glad you mentioned your podcast, because we're definitely going to talk about that, because that's something personally for me is of great interest, because I remember watching that unfold on live television. I remember how ugly that was and how ugly the ramifications were for all the players and stuff. But you mentioned that you're enjoying college football season. So, you know, how is it, you know, how's life been different, and how's it been since you left the sideline and you're no longer doing the sideline reporting thing every Saturday afternoon for Gamecocks?
I definitely loved it and enjoyed it for sure. And it wasn't, you know, any other reason, but just trying to make sure I'm a good dude around my kid and my wife. So I live in Dallas, Texas when I'm not here. So I was commuting, you know, a good time back and forth between Columbia and Texas. So my daughter's getting a little bit older. You know, she's 13 going on 40. So, you know, she notices when I'm not there or not. So after doing it about 7 seasons on the sideline with the guys traveling around, I really enjoyed it. Loved being with the kids, loved being, you know, on the ground level and working with Tommy Todd and Liz and all those folks behind the scenes. It was really great. But it's just one of those situations where I had to take something off the table. And so with the books going and all the creative stuff we've really been working on, I didn't want to take a back seat to that. So we kind of had to, like most things, put football on the side and focus on all the other projects and family stuff. But it's been really good. It's weird to see you get into a routine so much that, you know, okay, still on Friday and travel with the team, or Friday and get ready for it and put the game tomorrow at home, the pregame. And, you know, when that stuff is not there, you're at a softball tournament for 8 hours. It's a little bit different.
Yeah, I'm sure that was definitely an adjustment for you, especially early on in the season. You know, but obviously family comes first, and it's good to hear that you're able to spend more time with your wife and your kids and all of that stuff. But, you know, you mentioned your books, and obviously your Just a Chicken books have made a pretty big impact in the community here in South Carolina. Correct me if I'm wrong, but you have released a new book.
We dropped the second one this spring called Just the Chicken Little, and that one touches on, you know, kind of the coop is swaying, the coop is falling type deal. You know, Chicken Little, you've heard that story, but we just combined our story of just the Chicken Little and made the second greatest book in the world. Just Chicken Little, the first.
So, you know, you go around to different elementary schools and you read your book and you talk about the importance of reading and getting an education. So, you know, especially with the new book, I mean, what impact have you seen from the work y'all have done, and down the road, what do you hope to continue to see from your impact on the community with all your work?
Yeah, it's been really great on so many levels, going to working and around public schools around South Carolina. I mean, within the last 2 years, Preston and I probably visited over 200 schools, not just elementary, but middle, high school. We work with colleges. We do all types of professional development, educators, teachers, too. Because, you know, everybody, if you're from the South, you love football, you tolerate football, or you at least know something about football. So you fall in one of those three silos. So that's usually a lot of the bridge for us to connect with folks of all walks of life. You know, being South Carolina products, public school products, we really try to get out there and resonate. Because every kid or every parent or every, you know, a lot of them only see that narrow pathway of athletics as the way to a better life, the top shelf of life, as we like to call it. But we try to encourage them that, you know, if you become a really avid reader, if you get really good at the skills of reading, writing, and speaking, you can figure out some creative ways to really make a life for yourself, a really good life for yourself. You don't have to rely on gravity or looking good or trying to be like Beyonce or something, because that's already taken. You got to figure out another path. But, you know, we put a lot of effort and energy into athletics and sports, and that's great. But a lot of times, if we don't get a scholarship or do certain things or just, you know, achieve a certain level, be all conference, we feel like, you know, oh, we lost with that. But no, there's tons of lessons within sports. We just have to marry it up. And that's some of the things we've been working on in one of our deals called the Next Play Program, where we work with colleges like South Carolina State to really talk about the transition part. Because it doesn't matter if you played high school, college, all the way up to the NFL and pulled them like I did for a few years. You know, that transition out of sports is really tough, because there's a lot of great things in there. You got team, you got community, you have structure, you have all these different things. But we tell kids that they can center their lives around a lot of these things that they've learned through sports, not just football, but all sports. So going back to that deal of getting really good at your skills, reading, writing, and speaking, no different than an athlete, working on improving those things every day, not being boring, finding the things that you like football or video games or whatever. Be creative with it, man. You can go out there and have a really cool life. But if you think you're going to be Jadeveon Clowney, that's not going to work. So,
yeah.
And that's the thing we try to resonate with them, not just with the kids, but with the parents. My partner, Preston Thorne, he's a former teacher of the year, coach, all these different things. So we love to make connections with teachers. And again, you know, be a resource for them, because a lot of times teachers are trying to figure out really creative ways themselves to do the best that they can. And we rely so much in society on teachers to do everything, to be the mental health caretakers, to teach them to read, to teach them to be on time, to do all the things. So, you know, the more resources and skills we can kind of give them through our professional development program, we're all for it. But it's been really great to travel all over the state.
Yeah, you know, you hit the nail on the head with a couple of things there, especially at the end. We've got two teachers here on the GABAcast, including myself and Alex. And you're absolutely right. There's so much expected of teachers in modern society. It's more than just sitting in a classroom and teaching a subject. And I think it's great that you guys are out there trying to give all these extra resources to teachers and help them with that, because Lord knows, teachers, we need all the help we can get with all the extra expectations that are put on us. And two, and the more important point you made is you said these kids, it was like, the kids waiting to become Jadeveon Clowney. That's not something you can rely on in life, you know, being that once in a generation player. I think it's great that y'all are going around and stressing the importance of school and reading and writing and how those things can lead to success in life too. And there's a whole world out there that, you know, isn't necessarily being a NBA player, NFL player. So I just think that's awesome.
And one of the things that we always say is that, you know, there's only, you know, in the NFL, there's 53 dudes on the bus, 53 guys on the team. And we only need one bus for that. But there's 5-6 buses in the caravan. And there's a million ways to be involved in the NFL but never play in the NFL. And there's a perfect example. A gentleman that played it that didn't play. He worked at South Carolina when we were there. He's from Fairfield, Big T. He's the equipment manager for the Indianapolis Colts. T's been doing that for 15, 20 years. He runs the NFL Combine. And we always use that as a great example because, again, you look at T, you can't miss him on TV. He's got a big pot belly. He's running around. He's always fixing the helmets on the sideline. But he's right up the road from Fairfield. And, again, he just loves sports. And he knew that was going to be his path, and he figured that way out. There's a million different ways for kids to be in and involved around, not just sports, but everything. It's just about figuring it out. And that's the thing in sports, you get the autonomy to pick where you want to go. First day of basketball, you might be the shortest dude, but you're like, man, I'm going to go play center. And the coach will entertain that for like 5 minutes, but he'll give you a shot. And it's the same thing with life. We try to give the kids the autonomy to pick whatever it is you want to do. There's so many things. There's no limit on what you can do. It's like anything in life. The whole point is you got to have the skills to back it up. Making the difference between skills and talents, that's the big thing. Talent is Jadeveon Clowney. Skills is the person who figures out how to make the team by working on that get off and all those different things. It's the same thing with everything else in life.
Absolutely, 100%. You mentioned earlier, you mentioned your podcast. A couple questions with that. You know, first, what kind of inspired you to start your podcast? I'm assuming it's focusing, the entire series will focus on that ugly brawl between South Carolina and Clemson back in 2004.
It's going to be a 7-part podcast.
Okay.
And it's going to touch on the central part is the fight, but a lot of things that built up to that fight. There's a lot of different, you know, stories from both sides. We try to be as agnostic as possible because, sure, you know, we try to get part of the guys from Clemson. Obviously, my partner, Preston Thorne, he was the co-captain that year and was out on the field that day. So he was there on the ground level. I was playing for some other Tigers. I was playing for the Bengals then. But seeing it from that vantage point. So also the night before was the Malice and the Palace and how all these different things kind of maybe had a slight impact. We talk about the music of the day, the atmosphere in Clemson. A lot of folks, before the renovations in Clemson, there used to only be a small door that separated the locker room. So, you know, the things that those walls would say between each other. Just kind of the buildup of all of that within the series. Coach Holtz's last game, you know, out of the embarrassment of all this, South Carolina and Clemson both got their most winningest coaches ever, and Steve Spurrier and Dabo Swinney. And so, again, it's really wild to take a step back and look at this. And again, we just got this idea, you know, riding through the back roads of South Carolina, Preston and I, you know, listening to a bunch of podcasts, talking to each other and all these different things on the road. And, you know, about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, we started talking about Preston was like, man, you know, coming up on the 15-year anniversary. And it might have been the national pod, national guys talking about the Malice and the Palace anniversary and just putting all that together. And it's wild how much the players remember that, but fans and all these different things. The story in itself is really, really interesting, really layered, really nuanced. And the biggest thing is, like, there's memory is really, really funny. What people remember and what's true and what's not is really interesting.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad you went into more detail there because what I think is great about this idea for your podcast and the way you're going to do this is, you know, when people talk about the South Carolina Clemson brawl, they only talk about the fight itself. They don't talk about all the stuff that led up to it, which is really kind of a lot of people don't really know all the different details and all the deeper layers behind what happened on the field that day. So I think that's, you know, I think that's going to be a great series to listen to. And when is the debut episode?
So we'll, the first episode, we'll be dropping it this week, and we'll give you guys some links so you guys can post it all over and share it if you would you please.
Absolutely.
The trailer's already out now, and from there we'll be releasing the rest of the podcast the weeks right after that. So just like everybody else, we love to binge and listen to everything, so we try to make sure we had it all done and finished it. We just been finishing on the final mixes right now, so it's really, really great. It was really awesome. And you know, it's one of those deals we can't share it and get all the stories off of that. And it's just teasing it out a little bit on social media. It's been really interesting to see vantage point again from everybody. Somebody was on there saying, you know, I remember I proposed to my wife that morning. We went to the game that afternoon, and like you're like, whoa, like you'll never forget that. So, let alone whether it's your wife, you know, your engagement or the fight itself. So it's going to be really cool. It's going to be on our SoundCloud, and we'll be sharing it, of course, on iTunes and Google Play and all that stuff. And it's been really fun to do it, man.
Yeah, and we at the GabbaCast will definitely make sure we promote that as much as possible. I'm sure that's going to be a great series of podcasts to listen to. But let's come back to the present. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Langston.
I said, before I forget, Josh Kendall, also with The Athletic, he helped us out with a lot of this over the past year and a half. He's one of the guys that helped narrate the podcast. So, you know, not just some football dudes. We got some real journalistic guys out there, too, to kind of make sure we did all the things we need to do and dug really deep to get full comprehension.
That's awesome. I'm sure that's going to be a fantastic listen. And like I say, we'll definitely promote the mess out of that whenever it comes out. But let's fast forward 15 years to the present. Within the last few weeks for Gamecock football has not been very enjoyable. And Langston, if you don't mind, I want to talk about, it was an interesting comment you made on Twitter last week. I think it was the morning after the A&M game. You said, the tweet, I'm not trying to get you in any trouble here. I just thought it was a very interesting comment. It said, first off, the Muschamp quote was, and I quote, "We're not as far off as people seem to think we are." And you quoted that tweet on Twitter and said, versus you are what your record is. What is the difference in your perspective now that, you know, versus when you were on the sideline for all those years and having to maintain that professional, not professional, but, you know, you had to toe the company line, so to speak.
I understand completely. And that quote itself was from Coach Muschamp just a couple of weeks earlier.
Absolutely. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so, you know, part of it is me being just like everybody else, a fool with a gun, and that my gun is Twitter, and I'm a Gamecock fan. So part of me is I'm a football dude. I've been on teams that were just deplorable, just checked out all the way. The other part of me is a guy who has been in and around it and seen a lot of these things, not just from a player and alumni deal, but, you know, seeing Muschamp come here and do the 4 years to where it's at now. You know, the big thing is it's just real tough with a lot of the coach people. And I'm not saying that's what Coach Muschamp is doing. And I think he's being really genuine and sincere when he says something like, "We're not far off." Because I remember a story, not a story, I lived it. 1999, we went 0-11 with Coach Holtz. We were terrible. I mean, we had a top 25 defense. We couldn't score any offense. Injuries, all these different things, excuse, whatever it is you want to have it. Langston Moore had to go up to the O-line. I mean, that just shows you how bad everything was. We played one of the last games before we played Clemson, we played Florida. And I think that game was maybe a 7-10 point loss, but for the most part, that was the most competitive game we played all year. Eventually, the talent on Florida just overwhelmed us, and they figured out a way to limp out of here. But two things that day, we sold out the stadium, which was amazing, on an 0-10 team, and then we almost had the opportunity to beat that Florida team. But after the game, the record stands at 0-10, and his team sucks, and it's Lou Holtz, and what's wrong with y'all, and all these different things. And so to say that, you know, Lou Holtz probably could have said, he's really close, we're really close, but I think that adds a little fuel to the fire, and it's tough because I think Muschamp is our guy. I also think that Muschamp is in the midst of, he's a guy who's also, unlike a Coach Holtz at 68 or whatever it was, when he came here, 62, I'm just joking, I know he's 62. He had his personality. He had his nuance. He knew all his things. So much so that some of the things Coach Holtz relied on too much eventually was the downfall, and we talk about that in the podcast. I think for a guy like a Will Muschamp, we know he's a great defensive coordinator. We know he can recruit. Obviously, we know on a personal level, these players really love him, and he really cares him. You see that every Florida game. I mean, for years, these guys still coming up to him with reverence and all those different things. So it's kind of tricky because on one hand, you don't want to go through the same mistakes and be like, oh man, we saw this coming with Florida and all those different things. But also too, it's in the midst of a young guy who's figuring out his personality on the second time around. And I think for us, and this is the question that I posed for everybody when I was on the radio or whatever, is South Carolina, the program ourselves, are we so, I'm not saying we're elitist, but are we so spoiled by Coach Spurrier that, and all those successes that we don't afford Coach Muschamp that 5-6 years? Is it similar to, you know, they did it in Kentucky? Now, obviously, Kentucky's didn't run off and win the SEC East, but they have had incremental success. They won 10 games, and it seems that a Kentucky program is this, and you can identify this. But I think for us in South Carolina, you want to have that same message, in it, and it's not really there for us offensively. It might be there for us defensively, I think, for sure, because we show that. It's just after a while, these kids get overwhelmed and we don't score enough points.
Right.
For our team, I think the Muschamp process, and I thought he would figure it out maybe year two or three for us, talking about the identity, the purpose, when this C word, this culture word. And I think he's just in the midst, the staff is in the midst of figuring out what that culture is. Now, the offensive woes and deals like that is just, it's the catch 22. You know, after the Michigan game, Coach Muschamp and the team, they put everything on Brian McClendon. I liked the hire. I thought he was a young guy. I thought Coach Muschamp did enough to put some senior guys around him so he can kind of lean, you know, give him the opportunity to be who he is and grow. But we just hadn't seen that. And even some of the things with going back and forth between, you know, upstairs and downstairs, I said that Brian McClendon, you know, his best games as a coordinator came when he was up top, the Michigan game, obviously the games earlier this year when he was up top. So again, I don't know if him being so young, what did he feel he needed to be on the field? And that's where you see maybe the experience of a head coach like a Muschamp to say, Brian, go upstairs. And not maybe week 7 when it happened. We needed to see it maybe week 1 or week 2. I'm not sure. But again, I think this is where we're at in the program right now. Now, all the other noise going on with, you know, President Castlin and the AD and, of course, the Twitter and all those things, ultimately, everybody wants to win. And we all know that for sure. How we go about doing that, that's a whole different story. And I think that's probably the most frustrating thing, because we're all trying to pull in the same way. But we're being led by pain right now instead of having a vision of what this program is. Vision and having that pull us, that's what's going to get us to the top.
Yeah, absolutely. You mentioned the President Caslin thing, and I'm not gonna make any bones about it. Just my personal opinion, I was very disappointed this week with how the whole situation was handled. I thought pretty much everybody in administration at USC just probably needed to shut their mouth and stop talking until the season ends, at least. You know, you go around and you talk to all these media outlets and you say all these different things. They're going to get out. They're going to get reported. And it doesn't look good in the bye week leading into the Clemson game. Again, that's just my personal opinion. But it certainly doesn't help with all the noise, like you mentioned, all the noise going on with the fan base. It seemed like just when things were sort of settling down in the bye week, everything got riled up again. So, anyway, so you kind of talked about your general impression, you know, with the state of the program. Going forward, I have a kind of a specific question for you, or a specific couple of questions for you, and then kind of a third one that I'm just kind of now deciding to improvise and ask you off the cuff. One, do you anticipate any kind of staff changes after the season ends? And is Muschamp's job safe? And finally, let's assume Muschamp's back for next season. What needs to change in your opinion? What needs to happen in your opinion for him to be a successful head coach here at the University of South Carolina?
I'll start, I guess, with the first question was, are there going to be any changes?
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I definitely think there's going to be changes. I don't know if they're going to be rightfully so, but again, it's going to be kind of a catch 22. And this is just my theory. This is just me again.
Sure.
Over here wondering, I think, of course, McClendon is going to bear the brunt of this. And he probably will. They might ask him to take a step down, but where he is in his progression as just Brian McClendon on the fast track to the top, he's not going to take that step back. And there's no reason for him to, because, and this is the thing I'm so worried about, he's going to go back to Georgia or he's going to go back to, I don't know, Florida or someplace like that. And he's going to be phenomenal. And he's going to be phenomenal coaching. He's going to be phenomenal recruiting. And that's just how those things go. And so I think there's going to be that change there. Possibly some changes with the strength coach, because those things have been coming out of the woodwork. So I don't know, rightfully so, if those things are warranted, but some change is going to have to happen just to kind of maybe quiet that down. For me personally, I'd love to see us get somebody who's going to be more hands-on at the linebacker position. Now, I know we got Kyle that we upgraded a couple years ago, and he kind of splits time between the middle linebackers and some safety stuff, I think. But we need somebody, because, again, the development, we've had some guys come in here through the program, even Rescindio Lewis, guys like that. For whatever reason, not saying that's the reason why they're not playing, but I would love to see somebody have more hands-on time development. It's really tough when your special teams folks have to split time. And, you know, just all the nuanced stuff with these players, especially the linebackers who have to play in space, you know, our defense, really tough. And just improved overall, I mean, not just safety play is going to be the biggest thing, and that's going to be more so a personnel deal. I joke with Kevin Roche all the time. Nazruddin, the kid that decommitted from us, I went to Florida State, that forever is going to make me cry, because, I mean, we've been super elite at that safety position for years, and see it now. We got good kids, but good kids don't win the football game. kids don't make those tackles.
You need to have some dudes back there playing for you.
Just four tackles. I'll take that. It doesn't even have to be a dude. It can be just a sure.
Sure, tackle. Just a solid player.
Yeah, because right now it feels like we play with 10. Sometimes.
Now, it helps to have some dudes.
Yeah, sure. And that's where you see, like, a Kinlaw or somebody try to make it up with their
right.
With the magnificent play. We saw that in the Georgia game. So those are some of the changes. I mean, there's always changes every year, any time in the program. But, I mean, when you look at the top four programs that have consistency, you know, the things that are consistent with those programs is that those staff stay intact. And for the most part, they're really good in the quarterback position. They develop, they have their identity, and they are who they are. One caveat probably would be Alabama, and that's because everybody wants to get the next lightning and pop. Maybe we can be a little bit guilty for that a couple years. Not Alabama, but the Saban tree and all these different things. So that's what I think about for the first deal. The second question, you have to hit the head. What's the second question?
It's okay. You know, is Muschamp safe? Will Muschamp be back next year?
Oh yeah, he's got the most job security in the world.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I figured, you know, that's kind of where I'm at with the buyout and stuff. I just wanted to get ask.
And again, that's the other thing when I say, I mean, regardless of the buyout, God bless Jimmy Sexton. I wish he was my agent. You know, he worked miracles to make, you know, whatever these buyouts are that are just crazy astronomical in the fourth year. But regardless, I think we have to, as a program, even as long as Coach Tanner, the AD, and all these different things, we got to make sure that we give Coach Muschamp this shot. And when I say that, not so like we owe it to him, but more so we owe it to our program to have consistency, because we do have a lot of great coaches. They do have a staff that's relatively young. We're trying to build it for the future. And, you know, a conversation I was having with somebody else, Marshawn Lloyd comes here, the D-line continues to develop. Alinsky or whomever comes in here in year two and three, which would be year six of the Muschamp era, all those things peak at the right time and we make 11-2 run or something like that. I mean, that's not far-fetched away. But again, you hear the disheartening deal from Muschamp earlier this year when he said this was the best talented roster we had in South Carolina. This is what we got. So the point is, I think Muschamp's job is safe, and I think that we have to commit to the 30-day saving plan. We're going to save for 30 days. We got to save for 30 days, whatever it is. And I think even though it wasn't written in stone, we said 6 years, I think we have to at least give this number for at least 5 to 6 years.
Yeah, you know, all that's fair. And for the most part, I agree with that. I'm glad you brought up the comment that he made. This is my most talented team. You know, I almost – sometimes I wonder what the optics of this season would be if he had never said that. You say something like that, you got to have, I mean, you put a lot of pressure on yourself to have a winning season at the very least, you know.
This is where, again, this is just me, where I say where the nuance of a Lou Holtz or the nuance of a Dabo Swinney, where he is, where he can go to his, you know, dadgummit or whatever, you know, he's figured that out. Spurrier figured that out. Lou, you know, and I think for Will, he's figuring that out. And how does that relate to, you know, winning games on the field? He's gonna coach the guys hard. They're gonna be attention to detail, but I think how he manages that and the optics from the outside in, to your point, I think that's something where Will either has to figure out, I'm gonna double down and be my Frank Martin, you know, Will Muschamp, and that's just who I am, or I gotta figure out and live and die with these comments and kind of, you know, I don't know. So, and that's the whole point what I'm trying to make, where Will's trying to figure out that nuance part of being the head coach. He's got all the other stuff down, no problem. That's the stuff I think he's in the midst of figuring out, and I think that we have to give him some patience.
So, in the future, in the near future, what needs to change? I'm not, you know, necessarily talking specifically about a certain person or a certain scheme, or just in your opinion, what needs to change for Will Muschamp to be a successful head coach at the University of South Carolina?
What needs to change? Well, again,
like going forward.
Going forward, I mean, got to get consistently clear on what he's going to do offensively. I mean, we all know that that's kind of a given. But again, my deal with whomever comes in offensively, or even if we replace it with somebody in staff, you know, it has to be a really great teacher and somebody that's not going to come in here and say, well, this is going to be a 3-year plan for us offensively. You know, we try to implement the fun and gun and everything else, different concepts. Now, it has to be something that marries up to what Will wants our identity to be. We know that's going to be taking our shots when we have the opportunity, running the football for sure, and obviously figuring out different ways to stress defenses. That's probably similar to what we want to look at on defense. So I think we're going to have a really good teacher and somebody who can really relate to our quarterback that we have in-house. We do have talent here. We do have roaches here. It's just the confidence here between the ears for these two guys to go out there and do it. Because they're both proven winners, whether it's a carry on or a legacy or whomever's out there. We have a good bit of talent that's there in that service for. I think my good partner Preston said it the other day, you know, if you're a 5-1 team, 6-1 team, you're not far from being an 8-9 team. We saw that in year two here in South Carolina. And you're not far from being a 3-1 team if you're a 5-1 team. The difference is the little things in that. And so we just really have to double down. That's where I'd say, you know, Will just might have to be the guy he doesn't really want to be, possibly, is to punch the shop board guy more so, and really do it. Not so that because he needs to put fear in the people, but the devil's going to be in the detail. And he has to understand and know this being in the SEC. And I think he does understand this, making sure that the players understand this and live this out every day. And then you marry up all the talent and the recruits and all the great stuff that Will already does already. And then that'll be hopefully the thing that jumps us back to where we need to be. We play the tons of
confidence. Gotcha. Well, all right. So we have Clemson this week. I've already had you for over half an hour, so I'm not going to keep you much longer. But quick prediction. If you had to pick a score right now for the Clemson Carolina game, what would it be?
South Carolina by one.
Okay, folks. Well, you heard it here first. Langston Moore is predicting the upset over the heavily favored Tigers.
Nobody at the Gabba Cast is shaking their head. They're shaking their head the other way. No.
Hey, you know what? Actually, Langston, I have a personal policy that I never pick the Clemson Tigers to win anything. So
really?
Yes. So when you listen to the podcast this week, you'll hear me pick the Gamecocks to win. Will I be wrong? Probably. But I'm still going to pick the Gamecocks to win. I've never picked Clemson to win anything ever. Personal policy. And I'm going to stick to that. So, Langston, before we wrap up, I want to ask you one more question. There's a lot of frustration within the fan base right now. A lot of people, they're either at a loss for words, or, you know, they're raging on Twitter, or they're just angry about football. And I don't think Clemson being as good as they are helps any. But if you could say one thing to the angry Gamecock fan base out there on social media or out there in the world that are listening right now, that are weary of the Muschamp situation and the administration at USC, what would you say?
There's always basketball season.
There's always basketball season. There you go.
Baseball season. I mean, again, this is the funny part for me, being kind of where I am, where I think I'm somewhat young, somewhat old, wherever, whatever. The point is, as being a fan and really on this side of it, I mean, the players, we know they're doing the best they can do. You know, as the coach used to tell me, players play, coaches coach, administrators administrate, and we don't know what the hell they're officials do. And so the whole point is, you know, we got to fall into our silo, but it does us no good to go crazy at the kids or whatever. And we see that. We always know there's those irate fans or whatnot. But also, too, you know, the noise seems real loud on certain platforms. So, you know, you got to make sure you judge that. It's just like knowing back in the day, man, I don't go to that certain bar on a certain day because that turns into a Clemson bar at night sometimes. So it's the same way. Maybe you got to go on Twitter for a little bit and only check in when Don Staley and all the basketball teams are killing everybody, or Coach Fry or whatever. But, you know, this is kind of the cycle of it. And I say it's really hard when it's your team. But it doesn't help, to your point, man, when not only the team of the state is your rival, but they're doing really, 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 really good. And you're like, man, and they've been really, really good consistently. But we've also had an opportunity to beat them early on, and we beat them. And it's like, we're not far away. But again, it doesn't all help together. The point is, just be fans, cheer loud. Maybe if you don't want to spend some money or save some money joining the Gamecock Club, I understand completely. You know, we vote with our dollars all the time, but always just make sure you support the kids and the players out there and the coaches, because they are doing the best they can with what they got.
Well, Langston, again, you know, this isn't the first time we've had you on. It's been too long since you've been on, though. Thank you so much for coming on the show. It was great. Just some great conversation, and I think is, you know, what you're doing with the books and the getting in the schools and, you know, helping with the school kids and all that stuff, that's way bigger than sports. And I just think that's awesome. And I also appreciate all your insight on South Carolina athletics and South Carolina football and everything else. We definitely appreciate you coming on the show.
Man, I appreciate you guys and all the teachers and all the educators over there, man. Thank y'all. And like I said, man, we love being a Gamecock, being from South Carolina, and nothing else we're going to talk about except that, man, for every 2 feet.
Okay, awesome stuff there from Langston. Really appreciate him taking the time to sit down and talk about his work and, you know, the schools and his outreach with the community and his new podcast that focuses in on the South Carolina Clemson fight back in 2004. It's a lot more in depth than, you know, a lot of people think it might be. It kind of goes into the layers of it from both sides and from the coaches and the players and sports staff and all that stuff. So make sure you definitely get on SoundCloud and give it a listen. And just want to thank Langston again for his time with us. Quickly though, because we are running a little long here now, let's get a quick, since we didn't podcast pretty much at all the last, what, 2 or 3 weeks of the season?
Yeah.
Let's get a quick rundown from, let's say, season recap, season closing, or closing season thoughts from everybody, 3 sentences or less.
I'll start.
Okay.
There's a lot of rumor about the new offensive coordinator, who is at the time of this recording is theoretically, ostensibly going to be Mike Bobo. So again, you have Will Muschamp being loyal to his people, who, interestingly enough, Mike Bobo's Wikipedia page is actually a pretty interesting listen.
Is this three sentences or less? Well,
it's going to be, I promise.
Okay. Because we're at like,
if you actually go 10. Through it, Mike Bobo's Wikipedia page, that's probably more interesting than Mike Bobo himself. But at the end of the day, he is mega BMAC. But, you know, hey, I like chaos theory. I think that, you know, Ed Orgeron's deal, it was all about marrying the right offensive coordinator. And, you know, at the end of the day, this team was not bad. Yes, they got hit with Nancy Kerrigan style with baseball bats all year long, and everybody was hurt. It just was not well coached.
Do you know what three sentences or less means?
That was as good as I can do for three sentences or less.
Man.
I get paid to talk.
Not by me.
I'm done.
You don't get paid anything by GABA to do this.
I don't get paid anything by GABA.
Yeah. Alex, let's see if we can do six sentences or less since, you know, Richard raised the bar here.
This team had a whole lot of promise and a whole lot of talent and really a whole lot of coach-driven expectations at the beginning of the season. With that being said, it was probably the hardest schedule that we've ever seen in my lifetime. But at the end of the day, we just couldn't produce, and we had some really cool moments, and we had some really, really, really bad ones. And I think at the end, you know, when it came down to it, everybody was just afraid to say we can't fire Muschamp because we can't afford to. And I'm not saying that that would be the answer, but I think that was really the reasoning, because there was a lot of pressure from a lot of places, and we'll see what happens next year with this new loyalty experiment that we're going to keep riding the train on.
Go ahead.
Which goes back to my thing about, hey, coaches be getting paid, and it's sad when a state university with millions upon millions of dollars can't afford to pay their coaches' buyout.
Okay, am I allowed to go now?
Yeah, I'm gonna shut up.
I didn't ask you to shut up. I was just asking if I was allowed to go. All right.
Aren't you the boss around here?
No.
I know I'm not.
I don't think we have a boss.
Yes.
That's probably our problem.
That explains everything.
Best resume of a 4-8 team ever.
That's fair.
That's the tweet.
Given people quality losses.
That's the recap. Also, comma. This is my third sentence. Also, comma. It was hilarious to hear them constantly reference the South Carolina Georgia game last night during the SEC championship. Period.
Oh, was that everybody? Right.
That's probably the most pub we've gotten like all year.
Definitely the most positive publicity we've gotten.
Yeah, no shit. Am I actually helping recruiting?
So
thanks, CBS. Anyway, so yeah, that's our season recap. That's it. That's the tweet. I think me and Alex are the only ones that actually, you know, follow the rules and played the game the right way with those three sentences, but that's fine.
I don't like rules.
Richard, I just like giving you a hard time, man.
I think rules are stupid.
All right. What else? You know what else is stupid? Is that for some reason we have to continue to watch football. So let's do five sentences or less. Playoff thoughts. Go.
Oh, God. Am I going to go first again?
No, Alex and I are going to go first, and that way you can think about it and pare it down into five sentences. Okay? Sound good, bud?
I get no respect.
Damn right you don't. Go ahead, Alex.
All right. I was really hoping that somehow Utah was going to figure it out and be able to squeak in just to make something different. But since they couldn't get it done, I do think that the playoff committee got it right. I thought that leapfrogging LSU to number one was the right call. And I hope to see an LSU-Ohio State national championship game with LSU running away with it.
So I did hear Richard say, "I'm the boss," correct?
Yes.
Okay, just making sure I heard that correctly.
On that note, clearly it's not me.
On that note, I am now claiming that because it fits my, motivation.
Ethos is probably the word you're looking for.
It fits my motivations here. Until further notice, this is now an LSU Tiger podcast.
I don't hate that.
Okay. I'm like you, Alex. I want to see LSU, Ohio State, mostly because if LSU can't get it done against Ohio State, I don't think Oklahoma can get it done against Clemson. So, I'm sorry. If LSU can't get it done against Oklahoma, I just don't feel like Oklahoma can beat Clemson for whatever reason. I don't think that'll happen. LSU, Ohio State in the title game, I think LSU wins it. So, yeah. Although I am with y'all, and here I go on my Richard rant with like 10 sentences.
Five sentences.
Yeah, I know. But you got like 25 last segment. So I'm going to do what I want. What was I going to say? Now I don't even know what I was going to say. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
No.
Made me forget, Richard.
I didn't derail your train of thought. You were talking about if aligning, so if Oklahoma couldn't get it done against.
No. I was moving on from that. I was with you guys. I was hoping for chaos. This past weekend, like Utah did their part by losing, and then I wanted Baylor to beat Oklahoma, and then Georgia to lose, and like all the teams that were like on
Wisconsin
the
beat Ohio State,
right? Wisconsin Virginia beat Ohio Clemson. State, like anything like on the cusp that would take a team that was on the cusp out of contention. I wanted to see that just to see what the playoff committee would do, because it would have been freaking hilarious to me to end up seeing somehow, some way the playoff committee justifying putting like Bama in the playoff.
Oh yeah. To watch the riots.
Right.
Because they would have done it.
Oh, no doubt. They absolutely would have done it. So anyway.
Hey. You give me a bunch of grief, but just like that I go and totally redeem myself and get you back on your thought track. How about that?
You're right. Thank you, sir.
How about this? You want five sentences? I'll give you one.
Okay.
My thoughts on the playoff? It's almost like there are clearly only four really, really, really good teams in college football this year, and I can't wait to watch this.
Oh, it's going to be fantastic. I think the one thing the playoff has done for the most part, obviously you have your games that are hit or miss, and y'all can tell me if you think I'm wrong. I think one thing the playoff has done the last several years is produced some really quality football games. Because you're getting the clear-cut elite four teams year in, year out playing each other. And there's a – we've talked about this before. There's a clear gap between, five, six, and seven, eight, nine, typically year in, year out. So – those top six are typically give or take a team here or there every year, or typically in their own class above everybody else. So
the one I am really kind of remiss about is Wisconsin. But then again, too, they exposed themselves as not being a part of that top four. Like we thought they kind of were, but then their schedule exposed them. So hey, you never know. There might be one of those four teams that has their schedule exposed them. not naming any names or pointing any fingers, but
so basketball is a thing we have to talk about too.
Yes, basketball. So, being an LSU podcast, LSU is currently 7-2 with noted power win over Northwestern State today, 109-59.
It's better than losing to Houston by 20.
Yeah,
Do we have Shaquille O'Neal on our roster?
I thought I'd go with some positive news.
Actually, I think Shaquille O'Neal is probably the last thing we need, because our free throw shooting probably needs to get better right now. So
yeah, he's not exactly the person you look to.
No.
Yeah, guys, hey, you want to know what we could do? We could be a Wofford basketball podcast, because
I thought about that, but I saw, you know, they're in that brand new, you know, stadium that they built, brand new arena and
arena.
Yes, arena. And I looked at a picture from their game the other day, and it was completely empty.
Hear me out. Hear me out on this. Hear me out on this. There are some of the best basketball names on earth on Wofford's roster. Can I run down for you my top five?
Top three. Critical thinking.
I'm sorry, because there are five great ones.
What if I just mute
Storm Murphy? Number five, guard, Storm Murphy. Number 31, guard, Donovan Theme-Love. Number 25, forward, Messiah Jones.
Okay, that was a good one.
Number 20, center, David Applegreen.
I like Messiah Jones.
Messiah Jones is like one of the most amazing names ever.
I think that's my favorite.
And playing point guard, number zero, Zion Richardson.
Yeah, Messiah Jones is definitely my favorite.
Messiah Jones is good. I don't know, dude. Donovan Theme Love, the hyphenated. His name is Theme hyphen Love.
What if you combine Messiah with the Theme Love last
Messiah
name?
Theme Love?
Yeah.
That would be no. He totally plays football for Memphis.
That would be an East-West ball game.
Messiah Theme Love plays football for Memphis. He's like a defensive back.
Or like
–
Yeah, something. Or like baseball for Vanderbilt.
You know, getting back to South Carolina basketball, I said this to Sam the other day. I feel like we're one of those teams that defensively, especially, we get better as the season goes on. But we have clearly seen in a couple of these games that we're a pretty good zone defensive team. And I don't know if maybe Martin is just so stubborn that he's like, we're going to play man and we have to play man. And I know down the stretch in college basketball, you got to be able to play man defense. But for right now, when you're trying to work on a resume to get you to the NCAA tournament, if zone is going to win you a game against Boston University, then play zone and make free throws and layups or big keys.
Yeah, you know, here's my thoughts, and maybe we can get into this really in depth next time we podcast, because it's officially basketball season here in Columbia.
I think that'd be a good thing for us to do, like next week or so.
I have been on the Frank Martin train for a long time now. I was willing to give him 6 years to build the program because he stepped into a year -1 situation. That's how bad Darren Horn left it when he was telling all his guys to leave because they didn't really want to play for Frank Martin and all that stuff. And he basically inherited a Division II roster. The Final Four did a lot. The NIT the year before that was a stepping stone. But here's the deal. You made the Final Four. There's legitimate expectations now. And you have to get in the tournament more than once every 8 years. I don't care how hard this job is. You're supposedly one of the best coaches in the nation. You have to find a way to get this program in the tournament more than once every 8 years. And I don't see this team right now getting in the tournament. You know, they're going to have to get a lot better, and they need to beat a Clemson or a UVA outside of conference. And then take care of business in conference. And, guys, we're in the middle of December, and the two decent teams that we've played have been Wichita State and Houston. We've lost those games.
And we've gotten dragged
by 20 points tonight and then 23 points by Wichita State. We lost a – I know they have a solid mid-major program, but this team, South Carolina, should not be losing to Northern Iowa, okay? Lost to them by 6. Lost to a bad Boston U team by 8. Barely beat a really bad Gardner-Webb squad. Yeah, I know they made the tournament last year. That doesn't have anything to do with this year. They're not very good this year. They beat Coker by 14, for example. Coker's a Division II school. 14-point spread on that is not a lot. This is not a good basketball team. And in year, what year is it, 9, 8 for Frank Martin?
Something like that, yeah.
Y'all tell me if I'm wrong, but the product he's putting on the field is inexcusable. Tell me I'm wrong.
No.
If y'all think I'm wrong, please do. You know, have a dissenting opinion if you share it.
I agree.
It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. This is his 8th year. And the product he's putting on the floor is inexcusable. Inexcusable. I like Frank. I want him to do well here. But you made the Final Four, man. There's expectations now. You can't follow that up by going one game over 500 and then 500 a year after that and then start out this year the way you have after you've been hyping up your team all offseason about how good you're going to be.
Hey, you got to put your poop in the potty. Otherwise, you're the one that's going to get flushed.
Maybe Alex can share his perspective on this better than I can because he's been coaching basketball a lot longer than I have, and he's also coached at the college level. But I'm getting kind of sick and tired of Frank Martin sitting his best player to prove a point in a game. For example, A.J. Lawson, sitting him. We're better with Lawson in the game having a below-average game than a lot of those other dudes on the team having a good game. You know, we're better when Lawson's on the floor. Maybe Alex can expand on that and share some perspective to –
Yeah, no, I'm definitely with you there. You know, one of the things that that's always driven me crazy about Frank Martin, he did this with P.J. Dozier and Sedarius Thornwell as well. You know, a guy misses one defensive assignment, you know, maybe a guy cuts back door or something, and he just, you know, he got caught with his head turned, yanks him out. And it's so hard for any player, good or bad, to get in any kind of a flow, you know, when you're constantly like, revolving door back and forth on the bench.
And you're looking over your shoulder afraid you're going to be yanked out of the ball game.
And I get that Frank Martin has expectations, but at the same time, like, the game of basketball is a game of runs. You're never going to hold an opponent to 0 points. Statistically, a guy should be able to stand at the three-point line, close his eyes and throw it and make, you know, 10% of his shots.
Right.
So, you know, the idea that you're yanking guys for every little mistake, I mean, it gets a little old. And I get that you're trying to create an atmosphere of perfection, but it's hard. Again, basketball is a game of feel and flow, and it's organic and fluid. You can't always just yank a guy and sit him for 10 minutes, especially when it's your best player, because there's no question we have guys that work hard. We have some talented guys, but we don't have a lot of NBA talented guys on our roster outside of A.J. Lawson.
Right.
And when he's sitting 10 minutes of the first half on the bench because he missed a back door, he didn't slide over to take a charge, I mean, what are we doing?
I mean, yell at him, but, you know, yell at him during a timeout and throw him back out there. And the other, you know, another point with that, Alex, is if you're constantly yanking guys out, they're going to start playing afraid to make a mistake.
Right. It definitely affects their mentality.
You know, I mean, they start playing – uptight, whereas in basketball you need to play loose and kind of, like you said, free and, you know, with a flow to the game. And it's just I like Frank a lot. I think he knows what he's doing, but I'm starting to think I'm hoping he makes me eat my words by the end of the year. I really do, but I'm starting to think he's not the guy to get it done here. And you can talk about finishing the top four in the conference all you want, but at the end of the day, your job is to make the NCAA tournament. and you've done it one time. Your job is to win ball games and make the NCAA tournament. And he hasn't done that enough since he's proven he can get us there and then have success there. So.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's – I mean, I definitely think that's fair enough. It is. It's almost like, you know, at the end of the day, trying to prove a point is only as good as the point you're trying to prove. And if you're trying to rob your team of the ability to have its best playmakers on the field, if you're not violating the rules of the game – you can always say, really, what's your angle here? Are you just trying to be the boss, or are you trying to benefit the program? So I'm gonna step aside because I'm not gonna be your authority here on this situation. Although I think Alex brings up a great point. Making layups, that's a thing.
That's a thing
we don't do so good.
You can't be the worst team in the SEC from the free throw line.
No.
And we statistically 100%. Are, and it's not even close to the second the team in front of us. We're off their pace by like 8 percentage points.
If you're not going to have the blue blood talent that the Kentuckys and the Floridas have, you've got to bring something else to the table, namely your defense, which normally we do, but you've also got to bring the high free throw percentage.
Yeah,
you can't be a subpar team and go 55% from the free throw line.
You got to be 70% at a minimum.
We're shooting 59.8% from the free throw line.
It's horrible.
And God, Auburn, awful. The team right in front of us, the second to last place team, is shooting 66%. But you're right, Richard. I mean, you hit it right on the head. The average team in the SEC, right smack in the middle, Ole Miss, 70. Is shooting 70%. And that's...
I mean, and now when you think about it, that's 10 points a game.
That's about what should be reasonably expected from a Division I Power 5 men's basketball team, is to shoot 70% or so from the free throw line, if not mm-hmm. better. And you talk about the blue blood talent. Guess who's the best free throw shooting team in the conference? It's Kentucky.
Mm-hmm.
They're shooting 79.5%. We can bitch and moan about Kentucky and Duke and North Carolina all we want, but at the end of the day, those teams do the little things well.
Yeah.
They rebound, they make layups, they defend, and they make free throws. And that's the difference between having an elite program and a program that just flounders for years. That's the difference. It's the little things right there.
That's it. Absolutely, 100%. Speaking of North Carolina and Duke, our other friends, the Wofford Terriers, face off against North Carolina on December the 15th and Duke on December the 19th. South Carolina upcoming... what we're looking at is Clemson on the 15th, Virginia on the 22nd, and then we play the Mad Hatters of Stetson University the day before New Year's Eve.
So we'll beat Clemson and UVA and then lose to Stetson.
Probably. But I can't go that far without reminding everybody that we are now an LSU podcast, and Go Tigers faces off against East Tennessee State on the 18th, the other USC on December 21st, and then plays host to Liberty on the 29th before the end of the year. So there's nine pretty decent basketball games to watch here. And, you know.
Yeah. And look, and here's the deal. And Alex, maybe you can expand on this a little bit and see. 1, 2, 3, 4. 3, 4. I see. You're 7-4 now. Is that our record in basketball?
Yeah.
Personally, I think you pretty much have to beat Clemson. You can't crap the bed against Stetson, and you need to be competitive against UVA on the road. And then you need to take care of business in conference if you want to make – I mean, if you want to make the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, at this point being 7-4, if you want to make the tournament, you got to do all those things, and you're looking at least a top five finish in the SEC.
Right. But, I mean, yeah, I would say, yeah, top six maybe, top five, somewhere in there. But you've got to beat Clemson, I think.
Got to.
Think if you beat a team like Virginia – that will alleviate some pressure in conference. You don't necessarily have to finish top five, but I don't think this team's beating Virginia. I don't think it has the firepower to beat their pack line man-to-man defense, honestly. But you got to beat Clemson. You can't shit the bed against Stetson. And then, like you said, you got to finish well into the top half of the conference in the SEC beat some good people.
Especially against a pretty stinky Clemson team again. Like, that's the thing.
Yeah, they're not very good either. So
poorly.
They're not very good.
They're not, but yet again, still have given a couple of ranked teams a decent run. I mean, I know Florida State pulled away from them, and I know Colorado, that was a thing whereby Colorado was down early, but
yeah, Clemson ended up getting hammered by Florida State today. They ended up losing 72-53. Lost to Minnesota 78-60. Lost to Colorado by four, and they lost to Virginia. Florida. They lost Virginia Tech, and I know Mike White is a heck of a coach. I'm not knocking Virginia Tech, but they were preseason pick last place in the ACC this year. So as it stands today, that's not a very good loss, even though Virginia Tech did turn around and beat Michigan State a couple weeks later. So, you know, that definitely helps. But this Clemson team, their wins are over Presbyterian, Colgate,
TCU,
Detroit Mercy. Who the heck is that? Alabama A&M and TCU. That's it. The University of Detroit Mercy. Have you heard of that team, Alex?
No.
Yeah, they're a Division I basketball team that plays in the Horizon League.
I don't know, but I'm going to say Alabama A&M's logo is probably the coolest thing I've ever seen. And Alabama A&M is 0-8.
But we are an LSU podcast, so the LSU logo is the coolest thing you've ever seen.
Which one are we talking about?
The one where Coach O is holding up baby Simba on the Barstool T-shirt.
That's not a logo, but okay, fine.
It's the Gabacast logo. It's the official logo of the Gabacast.
God dang it.
All right, let's wrap this thing up, man. We've gone for too long.
It's been a long time coming. It's the holiday season. You guys deal with it. Guess what? You get what you pay for. If you had half as much fun listening to this show as we did recording it, then, well, guess what? We had twice as much fun as you. As always, I don't care who our offensive coordinator is. Just give us something that's fun to watch. Drive safe, go Cox. Never, ever forget to tip your waitress.